Welcome to the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast. My name is Lauren Wells, here with my co-host, Chris Seveny. We're committed to providing you with the knowledge required to build wealth through real estate investing. Tired of consuming content about real estate? Stuck in analysis paralysis? Ready to do your first deal? As a member of our community, you will learn how to go from consuming content to taking that first step into the world of real estate investing. Our show is not about getting rich quick, but about providing you with the knowledge you need to take action. Join us as we speak with experienced investors who share action tips on how to escape the corporate world, start a thriving side hustle in the world of real estate, and go beyond your W-2 or 401k.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast. I am your co-host, Chris Seveny, and today I have a special guest. We have Jake Harris with us today. Jake is an expert in investing in distressed commercial real estate. He is author of the number one best-selling book, Catching Knives. He also has a top-rated podcast, Passive Wealth Principles. And you can also find out more information, which all of this will be in the show notes, at catchknives.com or passivewealth.com. With that, Jake, how are you today?
I'm fantastic today. I actually had a great mastermind group connection yesterday. And so feeling very invigorated and ready to go take on the world and implement some of these new lessons that I've recently learned.
Definitely bring in the energy. I love that. Love bringing the energy on these podcasts. And today I want to talk to you about investing in distressed assets. And we'll talk about distressed commercial real estate, the opportunities, as well as why passive investors should consider investing in distressed assets. But before we roll too deep into that, why don't you tell us kind of what you got going on today and circle back how you got to where you are today?
Yeah. So you mentioned the book, Catching Knives. That is my clever way of playing off the tune of most people say, don't catch falling knives. I have found that real estate is a scarce commodity. And so whereas most people refer to that in the stock market, you know, your Tesla stock goes down from 420 down to 69 or whatever it is that in value, you wait until all that has settled and then you buy into the market. Well, with real estate, and especially commercial assets, is there's times in which that asset may only trade hands once a generation. Mm-hmm. And it only requires one other person to be a bidder or try to buy that asset. Only one other person. And then they buy it because of that scarcity. Whereas with a Tesla stock or something like that, you can buy as many of them as you want at any time. I say any, unless there's billions and billions of dollars that you have. But if you have billions of dollars, you're not listening to this podcast probably, and that's not your problem. So I was like, and don't be taking advice from me. And actually, nobody should probably take advice from me in general, because I don't know how to predict the future on anything. So that is my grain of salt. So I'll take you back. 20 years ago, I got out of the Army. I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, like a lot of other people, on the genesis of their journey into real estate. And I wanted to start doing deals. And I did. And I started and I rode a very nice wave up in the early 2000s until 07, 08 collapse. And I was caught in that collapse and crushing. And I had all these houses and I'd become a millionaire before 30. And I had all this success. And then it all crashed down. And I ultimately had a couple of foreclosures on my record. I couldn't short sell liquidated portfolio. And you can get more of the details of this in the book, where mm-hmm. I kind of illustrate my own personal journey. Mm-hmm. But what happens, and it's a quote that I put on the back of the book, is that you want to be buying when there's blood in the streets, even if the blood is your own. And so in that instance, my blood was that in the streets, meaning that I was losing on these deals. These assets were falling apart, but that was the best time to be buying because you were getting such an extreme discount. And that's where it kind of came of a long-winded way of saying we started buying distressed assets. We started buying them at scale. We started buying them at trustee sale. I, because I didn't have the money at that time, became the workhorse for someone else that had money. I was the one that went into the trenches and started buying and researching and doing these other things. So I had the understanding, the skill sets, and then we leveraged that up. And then ultimately we purchased assets in 23 states, I think 1,200 properties. And then that has rolled in over several years, commercial real estate. And that's kind of leads up to what today. And I have a private equity boutique private equity real estate company that does commercial real estate, some single family land assemblage, development, and other things. And these are in different funds based on different investment criteria. And I wrote Catching Knives in 2020. We're joking about this, and you've been interviewed on my podcast. Well, it was like, I thought, this is it. This is the time it's going to crash. Like, oh my gosh. So I sat down during COVID, people working in the office. And so I just really pounded it out. And I was like, dude, this is it. Mm-hmm. And it came out and the market took off like a rocket ship. So I go back to the earlier, I don't know if you should be taking advice from me, because I was like, I was very confident that the market was going to be crashing, and it did the exact opposite and it shot to the moon. And so I'm sitting there, and then all of a sudden now interest rates are tripled and construction cost is up crazy high. But I'm starting to see, and I think you probably see more than I do, the tremors of distress are really starting to happen. And this is why I am so very, very excited-ish, because this also means there's a lot of pain happening and into sorrow and deals investors losing money. But there's massive opportunity when there's distress, when people come in. And that's why you can make generational wealth in one deal in distressed times. Because everybody gets alligator arms, everybody pulls back, and it doesn't seem to make sense to them. It's too scary, but that's where the best buying opportunities are. And it really de-risks your investments that you're investing into, because now you're not speculating on something going right. All the things have maybe now gone wrong. And so now you're just evaluating it, and you can buy it under its intrinsic value.
No, exactly. And kind of, I agree wholeheartedly with everything that you said. And, you know, the question I would pose for people who weren't around in 2005 to 2010 timeframe, it did shoot up. And I would ask the question is, what was your biggest lesson learned going through that experience 15 years ago, where unfortunately you were kind of caught, where you had the foreclosures on certain properties and stuff? What would you say was your biggest lesson learned from that period of time?
I mean, there's a lot of lessons learned. It is like, and so yeah, to boil it down to the one, I would think about this. And for me, and this is my story or my experience, was I didn't develop systems. And what I mean by that is, and I'll give you an example, is it's easy. I say easy to lose weight. It's easy to lose weight. Say you want to lose 10 pounds. You can just not eat for 2 weeks, and you probably were not going to die. You'd be uncomfortable, but you could lose 10 pounds. Like, that's a pretty easy thing to do if you just had enough willpower. But the issue is that it's not sustainable, is not eating for that time period. And maybe you could start eating, but what happens is you didn't develop a system. And so this is why I love the book Atomic Habits. And Atomic Habits by James Clear was, you default to the level of your systems. And if you want repeatable success, you need to have a system. What happens, goals are great for establishing a one-time goal, but a system is something that can get you predictable and repeatable success. And so, and that's where I white-knuckled the ability to have and become a millionaire. But I didn't develop any systems, and I didn't really move the goal line. I became a millionaire, and I kind of just started sitting on my laurels. I kind of just was like, okay, cool. I've done it. Look at me. And I wasn't continuing on because I hadn't built this and established this basis. $1 million 15 years ago is a much different $1 million than it is today. I don't know. Cost of gas wherever you are, but I was like, it's $5-6 a gallon for a gallon of gas. 15 years ago, it was $2, you know? And so like everything has been eroded away as the government just printed and threw trillions of dollars out there. And so that's, for me, is understanding how do you start leveraging systems? How do you start creating consistency and predictability in the things that you're doing and your action items? So if it is you're a passive investor, great. What systems can you tap into that allow you to evaluate or to do due diligence or to get a certain amount of deal flow? Or if you're looking for off-market deals, or if you're trying to generate leads for a marketing company, I don't care what it is. There's a system for that, and then it's broken down, and it's usually a fairly simple system that you can start following so that you can start tracking and then start measuring results. And so for me is I needed to develop those, or at least I like to call it R&D, rip off and duplicate other people's systems, because let's be honest, nothing is new under the sun. Someone else's system works, great. Grab that system, take it, adapt it to your circumstance and what you want to do, and then leverage that so that you can get more predictable and repeatable success.
Great advice there. One of the things we're starting to see on our end, because again, we're usually in the front lines, that I think is similar, but different, of course, over time, is goes back to people being over-leveraged. I'm starting to see people trying to do a lot of creative finance where they're not putting any money down or very minimal money down. And a lot of people are first-time investors who don't have significant funds and don't realize that it's great that you can buy a house with no money down or a property, no money down, but and you still have a loan on it that you still have to pay. You may have to pay if there's no tenant. And then people forget how much, you know, a new roof may cost or new HVAC system and end up realizing they have no money to repair it. The tenant moves out and then the house just sits there vacant and they can't rent it because it's not rentable, but then they still owe somebody some money on it. So, and again, not saying that's going to be a macro issue, but definitely a lot of cracks we're starting to see, which kind of rolls into next. I'll say, let's talk about the commercial real estate side, because there's so much news out there right now about how many billions or trillions of dollars are coming due within loans in the next few years, that once they reset, lenders aren't lending because the property with the cap rates are probably worth 50% of what they're worth. COVID crushed a lot of commercial where offices are downsizing and people are moving to smaller spaces and having trouble leasing the spaces. So tell us a little bit about what you've seen and what you think the opportunity is in that space and the benefits for somebody who's passive, why it would, might be something they should look at or consider some a fund like yours that invests in some that type of strategy.
Yeah. So I would say it's very, very deal by deal specific. I like what you do as far as like you have a fund that you're kind of targeting these distressed pools of assets or at least mortgages, and you're kind of averaging it out. That's one of the advantages of being kind of a passive investor or an investor into a fund is you're getting advantage of multiple kind of assets. There's also, and obviously in commercial, where you might have just a specific dedicated fund to go off after an individual asset, but the timing is one of those most crucial factors is you don't have typically a lot of time to buy some of these or buy a distressed note or come in and create some rescue capital or do something like that, because the fuse, the distress fuse is kind of lit and you need to be able to move in and quickly kind of take advantage of that. Also, because it is in a distress situation, you're not going to have all the information. When you go buy an existing building on the market, you get an offering memorandum, you're getting rent rolls, you're getting inspection periods that you can dive into, you can test out all these other things. And then you're not necessarily getting access to all of that when it's in a distressed situation. And so that's why you're often be able to buy it at such a significant discount, because you're factoring in that risk factor of having unknown information. So I go, the operator's experience and their ability to understand and at least see some of these red flags. I also tell people you need to be doing your homework ahead of time because of that limited time period of when it may potentially be going into distress. There's sometimes opportunities to start doing your homework before it's actually in that distress situation. I don't know about you, but I think sometimes there's like leading indicators that are going to be that something is going awry with this asset into the near future. It could just be a maturity of the debt So people, you can track that. You can get into CMBS. You can get into Reonomy. You can get into these software and data programs to see when debts are maturing on commercial assets. And if it's maturing now or in 3 months or in a year, wow, like you said, a bunch of debt is turning over. What's going to happen? They're going to be more and more stressed the closer and closer that gets if they don't find an option. So if you're doing homework 3 months before that note is due, then you may have an advantage. You can get that rent roll. You can get some comps on that. You can get, you know, market volatility of leasing activity or rental activity, or if it's a house, short-term rental or sober living or all these other alternative ways that you could potentially make some money off of that asset or value add component to it. And so the earlier you get in that process, the more informed that you can be. And I'm going to tell you this, you're never going to have 100% of the information ever, ever in any deal ever. You're never going to get 100%. And if you had 100%, then it's too late. So you're going to have to get a certain percentage of it with an understanding of here's the calculated risk in which we're taking based on this asset. And oftentimes I talk about this is the intrinsic value of the asset you're going into, the sticks and bricks. If it's a 40,000 square foot office building, and you can go buy it for $50 a square foot, intrinsically, like, I think that's a good deal from a rough order magnitude, because you're buying it at $50 a square foot. And right now it costs you $250 to $300 a square foot to build something of existing of that same thing. So I'm like, no one else could ever build product at $50 a square foot. And then it comes into your business plan. Are you looking to exit in and out of this in the next 30 days, 6 months, 6 years? And that's the other important part that I think people need to consider is your business plan becomes a critical component to how and what you're investing into on these assets. So I would think, and I have office buildings, I'm not very bullish over the next 6 to 12 months on office. It's still a very, very tough market. You're going to have a hard time leasing it up. You're going to have a hard time. There's more and more subleasing. And that's where market specific factors and market velocity. Tech companies are now putting hundreds of thousands, in some markets, millions of square feet of office on the market as a sublease. And so all of that would need to absorb before you could potentially get your office space lease, unless you're buying it at such a discount, you're going to be able to be half the price of anyone else in the office market of vacancy, then gay. That could work for your business plan.
Yeah. One thing, key takeaway for people that I think is important is you mentioned the business plan. And I think a lot of people are so antsy to like due diligence and buy an asset. They don't have a business plan for the exit and what that looks like and what options there are to make sure there's more than one exit potentially for an asset, or what sensitivity analysis to be, okay, I want to exit this in 3 years. What happens if it's 5 years? Now I'm projecting 80% lease, it's only 70. What happens if it's 90? That's the thing I see a lot of people just using a calculator and punching numbers to make it look as rosy as possible, or try and work to a number instead of putting in some realistic expectations on an asset to see how it will act. And I see that starting a little bit, not in commercial, in short-term rentals, where people are buying assets in the past 12 months in short-term rentals at 2020, 21 rental rates or post-COVID. Now it's 50% less. And they're like, I can't do anything. I'm like, well, we should work as a long-term rental because that's how you should underwrite every short-term. And they're like, oh no, it doesn't work. And I'm like, I don't know what to tell you. So
short-term rentals, I've been a little bit bearish on for a while.
We hope you're enjoying this episode of Creating Wealth Simplified. We wanted to take a moment and tell you more about our passive income fund at 7E, which is open to both accredited and non-accredited investors. Our latest offering targets an 8% annual return distributed monthly, with the ability to potentially achieve a greater return through our bonus share program. If you'd like more information, reach out to us at invest@7einvestments.com to learn more. Thank you.
Just because I think there's a lot of headwinds in the short-term rental space in general. I was talking about this the other day, is you have a lot of political and potential governmental regulations that can quash an entire market. I don't know if you saw recently, just Dallas just banned all their short-term rentals, even though they were licensed, they just decided. And so here's the reason why is it becomes very politically easy to squash the short-term rental because it's really targeting like the rich that has a second home, my vacation house. And so like as a council person, if you were, you'd be like that guy's second or third and rental property that he's renting out there, we can just ban that. And it's coming up against a bigger seismic societal issue of a lack of housing. Like we are short housing. So then it becomes very, very easy to go squash the short-term rentals in a market to hopefully and free up for rentals for the demand that is pent up. And so politically, you're going to have a lot of support for that. It doesn't matter if you're right or left. It's a very easy thing for politicians to do and to put regulatory environment on that. And then you also have the hotel industry. They're not fans of Airbnb and short-term rentals, and they have a very, very robust lobby group. They collectively have 50, 60, 70, 80 years of lobbying horsepower to go support some of the things that will also undermine short-term rentals and try to drive up taxes and do all kinds of other things on those short-term rentals. And so there was a post-COVID blip of euphoria when money was raining down. And that's where a lot of people jumped into that. And that's why I think there's also going to be a lot of people. And you're seeing that most of the inventory I'm seeing on the market right now on a single family is Airbnbs that are not working anymore. So people are trying to exit them. And you can kind of see the telltale signs of it is because they're all furnished. They got like a little neon light somewhere in the background. There's like a pool floaty and you're staging photos. They're just taking their Airbnb photos. They're dropping that on the market. Because if you have a 3% mortgage rate right now, you're not getting rid of 3% mortgage rate. But if you have an Airbnb, you bought at peak market value and it's not renting out anymore. And now you're having to fork out monthly payments. You'd be like, guess what? We're getting rid of this.
Yeah. And the other thing I've seen is there's always going to be a short-term rental market in certain beach communities, ski communities. But when I see like house across the street from me going short-term rental, I'm like, you're in a residential neighborhood. So two strikes against you. One is, you know, there's the NIMBYism, which most people don't really believe is true until it impacts them, which everyone thinks everything is great. You know, oh, we can do this, we can do that. But the moment it impacts you, all of a sudden, it's like, whoa, 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 stop here. And I'll be honest, I don't want my neighbor to have a short-term rental because I live in a quiet neighborhood with kids, basically little kids riding their scooters around. And then you got 25-year-olds zipping through a neighborhood at 50 miles an hour or something, you know, half cocked half the time. Now, is that something that you want? So yeah, it's very interesting. And yeah, I saw that in Dallas. And I think Airbnb just sued New York City or something as well, because they're trying to, you know, ban it. I'm in the Washington, D.C. area. Washington, D.C. is extremely difficult to get short-term rentals in. And again, we're near the lobbying capital of the universe where I am. So it's very interesting. So let's talk a little bit about, you mentioned commercial real estate, some of the deals. When you look at kind of a deal, because there's probably going to be a lot of commercial assets that are probably going to be available in the near future for you. What are some things that you look for of like, okay, I can make this work? And what are some things like this asset just, it just doesn't work no matter what the case is? Is there criteria you go that you look at to determine kind of what's a go versus a no-go?
So I would say back to what we talked about earlier, the business plan starts first. So understanding and what you're trying to do. And so you can systematically approach some of these assets. So there's some that are opportunistic purely. They just have an opportunistic fund and they're just looking for any deal that looks, you know, or pencils or makes sense. Previously, and a lot of times I've talked about this, is I'm very, very bullish on certain markets that have positive population fundamentals and there's growth to them and jobs are coming in. And like, I'm bullish on those markets. So like, we're looking for in specific markets for deals in those markets, but it's a very small window of kind of the opportunities that lie in those. And then part of it is going to be is what is that existing asset? So I think retail and office, more so office, is challenging. So you have to have a better discount. And I think that anything is almost valuable to buy at some price. with the exception, a very big exception, I talk about this and I have a due diligence course that I teach people. Part of that is from getting kicked in the teeth several times and making lots of mistakes over the last 20 years of buying things I shouldn't have bought or not researching. But due diligence, like there's things like contamination. Oh my gosh, you have a contaminated site because there was a dry cleaner there or a gas station or some of those other things like that, where now you're on the hook for that contaminated dirt. Even if you bought it for nothing, $1, there are sometimes some pieces of dirt that would actually cost you millions and millions of dollars. There's also understanding zoning and regulations and property taxes. There's some properties, we're actually talking about this the other day, up in Tahoe, a very nice vacation rental and tourist destination and still lots of demand. But the property that was going to foreclosure had hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars of tax assessments against it because of impact fees for a master plan community. And so even if you bought it for $0, you're going to still have to fork out $150,000 a year in taxes. Maybe you're okay with that, but understanding that is drastically pulled down the value and you can't get a permit on it for 3 years if you're lucky. And so now all of a sudden be like, I can't build anything. I got to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars in taxes. And what is my exit plan? So that's why I say it starts with your business plan. And so if you're saying, hey, we're specifically looking for San Antonio, we're looking for office, or if it's retail. And I tell the more specificity that you get to what you're looking for, the easier it is to say no to all the things that don't fit into that box. So you can stop wasting your time. So if you're just like, I want a good deal, well, then you're on looking all over the place. You're looking random. You're wasting a bunch of time. But if you're like, I'm only investing into flex industrial buildings that are worth between $1 and $5 million in this metroplex and this suburban market, here's the assets that I'm targeting. And then it allows you to start doing your homework on those specific assets ahead of time. And then basically you can come up with a price. Here's the price on the intrinsic value. Anytime I can buy it under $50 a square foot, I'm good, with the asterisk of as long as it's not contaminated or some of these other things. So now you have your buy box, your business plan. So when you start seeing your opportunities or they're presented to you, it quickly comes in. Is it this particular asset that I'm looking at? Is it under this price point? Can I buy it for this? Does these things of the due diligence, or there's a risk? No. Then it becomes very, very easy and quick to make a decision and buy something. And that's where you're going to get the most profitable deals, is your speed in which you can execute that, because you started with your vision, your business plan, and your strategy. And then you have also all the resources lined up for that. You have your title company, you have your environmental inspector, you have your contractors, you know what things are costing or will rent out for. And then it's like, okay, great. When we buy at this price on this asset in this area, we can move very quickly. And that's where I think the most opportunities present themselves.
Yeah, a few things that kind of uncork there that I think are really important. You mentioned, you know, with the business plan comes speed and efficiency. I think anytime there's somebody in distress, speed is quicker you can get the deal closed is more important than the number, I believe, in most instances, because they're in distress. They want to get that stress underneath, get that out from underneath them. You mentioned contaminated soil sites. Oh my God, we could talk for hours on that. But just for anybody out there, if it's a former contaminated site, just be very careful, because you're not only responsible for contamination on that site, but a lot of times it goes through the whole neighborhood and you are responsible for cleanup on every one of those properties. And, you know, there's a phase one, phase two environmental. I remember back in 2004, we were building 160 luxury condos in Boston, and it was a former gas station. And we had planned for a certain amount of remediation, but in the phase twos, basically didn't believe any of the underground tanks were leaking. Well, three out of the four were leaking. So you literally had the guys in the white suits out there cleaning everything up, and end up costing, I think, an extra $1 million to clean everything up. So contamination, you know, to me, it's similar to you, it's just not worth the risk. It's such an unknown that it's really not worth it. So As we get ready to wrap up this episode, A, thanks for coming on today. Anything you'd like to leave our guests with, a nugget, as well as ways people can reach out to you?
People can reach out to me. I'm active on social media, kind of across the board. Jake.realestate on Instagram is where you can find most of me, or just Jake Harris and type it into, or Jake Harris Real Estate. I'm not Jake Harris, the guy on the Deadliest Catch show. I've never caught crabs. I don't think I've ever been to the Bering Sea. So that's not me. Real Estate, Jake Harris Real Estate. You can find me on those. You mentioned it earlier, catchknives.com for the book or the due diligence course and other things like that. Passive wealth is where we talk and help people and guide them through the systems to become more passive investors. That is, I think, more and more critical, especially in distressed time periods, vetting out sponsors, vetting out their funds, vetting out those components. And that's the last nugget I want to leave with people is due diligence. Is I think due diligence is one of the most critical aspects of real estate. And there's so many people that in the last few years just willy-nilly ran in and got into deals. We even mentioned it earlier, short-term rentals, just, oh, the Smoky Mountains are a great place to get in. They didn't understand any of the risk. And so getting and running through these due diligence components or getting a checklist, we give away the checklist. And I think it's 74 points that we use on almost every single asset that we purchase is because why do you use a checklist? Pilots use checklists and doctors use checklists because what happens and when these situations arise is you don't want something very, very simple to get missed that also causes in a plane or surgery, people die. Your plane crash or a heart surgery, you're not going to die in an investment deal. May feel like it. Financial stress is real stress. And so to your point earlier about being speed is so like that stress is real that people, and I unfortunately have been aware of people that have committed suicide or attempted suicide because of financial stress. And so understand what you're getting into and the risk. And that's why I think due diligence, due diligence, due diligence. And I keep shouting it from the rooftops, especially if you're investing into something of distress, because there is inherent risk, but it's everything in life is risk. It's about taking calculated risk, understanding, sitting around on a bump on the log on your couch all the time has risk to it. So does investing. Now take calculated risk, understand what you're getting into, go take active role in managing your life and moving forward to your dreams.
I love that analogy about the checklist with the doctor. And one I hear frequently is similar to, you know, being on an airplane. And would you rather be on a plane with a pilot who's been flying for 20 years and been through every type of weather pattern or every incident that could happen on an airplane? Or would you rather have the person who's recently just got their pilot's license and has only been flying in, you know, perfect weather? And I think that's very important to realize today, because the last several years in real estate has been able to hide a lot of errors that people were making because of the appreciation that was being able to gain. So a lot of mistakes were being made, but they kind of could get swept under the rug. Times are starting to change, and there's going to be a point in time where, just like 15 years ago, there's no sweeping them under the rug and they are going to truly show themselves. So you want that person who's been on that, flying that plane for 20 years through the bad weather. Thanks for coming on today. And thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode of the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast. As always, make sure to leave us a review and like us on your favorite listening station. Thank you, Jake. Thank you, everyone. Take care.
Thank you for joining Lauren and I on this episode of the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast. Each week, we bring you expert education, experience, and information in a digestible format to help you identify investment opportunities so you can build wealth through real estate and take action toward your financial goals. Enjoy the show, share with a friend, or subscribe to the show and leave us a review.